Good evening, good morning, wherever you may be. This is the best in overnight talk radio. You're tuned in to Coast AM. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Thank you for joining me. We've got a great show lined up for you. I know I say that every time, but that's because I'm excited about the guests we bring on and all the cool stuff that we're going to be sharing with you tonight. A little bit later on in the show, sudden and unexplained, the sleep deaths that inspired Freddy Krueger. That's right. A lot of people don't realize that the storyline behind Nightmare on Elm Street is based in reality. Adam Bulger will be my guest. We'll talk to him about those strange cases that inspired Wes Craven to create one of the most iconic, terrifying horror movie characters ever. And of course, we just lost Wes Craven about 2 weeks ago. Thought it'd be interesting to talk about this and one of his most famous and popular character. So we'll do that a little bit later on in the show. Joining us in the first 2 hours, though, we've got road trippers and paranormal enthusiasts Greg Newkirk and his wife Dana Matthews, who will be talking to us about the weird and unusual world around us, all of these amazing locations that they've had a chance to visit, investigate, and talk about. Plus, they've got a traveling haunted museum that they go out with, a program they're working on called The Seance with John E.L. Tenney, and so much more. It's going to be a great night. I'm glad that you're here for the time with me and able to share this. All of the links that we talk about, I'll make sure that we send over to Coast so they can post them on the Twitter feed tonight so you can find them easily, maybe even on the news page. So that way you can follow along with the different cases and stories that we will cover. I wanted to mention that because I know Greg and Dana are going to be sharing a lot of great information with us. Let's take a quick break so we can get right into the show. I'm Dave Schrader. This is Coast to Coast AM. We are back, and this is Coast to Coast AM. I'm Dave Schrader. Tonight, we're going to take you on a very engaging journey. My guests on the show, a married couple and researchers, journalists, Greg Newkirk, Dana Matthews. They've been together for nearly two decades, traversing North America on hundreds of paranormal adventures in search of everything from legendary monsters to mind-bending psychic phenomena, covering everything in between. They've even come face-to-face with Bigfoot deep in the hills of West Virginia, successfully investigated an alien abduction on North Carolina's mysterious Brown Mountain, and grappled with angry ghosts in a violently cursed town in rural Pennsylvania. That's just to name a few of the adventures. They've got so much more to share with us this evening. Welcome to Coast AM, Greg Newkirk and Dana Matthews.
Hey, Dave. Thanks for having us.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you guys join us. How you doing, Dana?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you doing?
Doing well. You're a little quiet, so we'll need you to speak up for us. Greg, you're coming through nice and clear, but I want to make sure we can hear your lovely wife on this episode as well. Thank you guys for joining. Greg, I know I've had you on Coast to Coast. Dana, this is our first chance to chat, so I'm glad you're able to join us this evening and share some of these stories and insights. I got to ask, though, how did you two come together with such a weird background and passion with the supernatural and paranormal?
Oh, that's a long story. I don't know if we've got the time for that. But I'll
I got 4 hours. Go ahead.
Well, the abridged version is Dana and I both grew up ghost hunting. We were walking around cemeteries in the middle of the night, sneaking out of the house before we even knew that it was a thing people did. And eventually, we found each other via the miracle of the internet. We both had crappy GeoCities websites showcasing our ghost hunting adventures. And eventually what ended up happening was Dana got a Canadian television show, and me and my dumb friends got really, really embarrassed that we weren't picked for a TV show, and we ended up hating each other for years. And then one day I felt terrible about the way that we had treated them and the way that things ended. So we rented a car, and this is creepy. We rented a car, printed out pictures of them, and we drove to Canada, only knowing where one of them worked in the town that they lived in 7 years prior. And you know what? I'm a darn good detective, because in 30 minutes, we'd found them. And of course, they didn't let us know where they lived because they thought we were there to tar and feather them or something. But we buried the hatchet and eventually started going out on adventures together. And then the adventures just got crazier and crazier as the years went on.
Oh, you zany kids. How old were you when you had your first experience, Dana, with the paranormal?
I would say about 21 when I had my very first experience. I had always loved the paranormal. I was a kid that loved real life ghost stories, and I love the X-Files and all that kind of stuff. But I would say that probably the first time I experienced something that I couldn't explain would have been in 2001. And it was at a place called the Hermitage in Ancaster, Ontario. And a group of friends and I experienced what we can only really describe as these strange shadow beings that kind of came out of the woods in this abandoned mansion. And we, a group of probably about 15 people, all saw the same thing, and we were obviously terrified. We had no idea what was going on. And it was the first experience that I had, and I was basically hooked from that point on. I really wanted to try to understand what I saw and potentially experience even more paranormal.
Well, can you tell us what was your experience?
Well, we were, so a group of us were standing at the Hermitage, which is the burned ruins of an old mansion, and it's in the middle of the woods, and these creatures sort of came out of the woods, and I always describe them as being shadows, but really what they were more like was TV static, and they were about 8 feet tall. They had very long arms, very long fingers. They weren't human, but they were shaped human, and they came out of the woods and came towards us, and this massive group of people all experienced the same thing, and obviously everyone freaked out because we didn't know what we were experiencing, and left in a hurry, obviously. And so it was sort of this thing that made me want to find out what potentially I had seen. So I started researching and found that other people who were visiting this same place were seeing the same thing, these tall shadow-like beings. And the legend goes that the area is protected by these shadow creatures that really are not big fans of people sort of treading on this territory. So they tend to herd people like cattle out of the area. And that's exactly what we experienced. And plenty of other people were experiencing the same thing. So it was really, it was a very cool experience.
Was there any other sense that you got? I mean, you saw this weird thing. Was there any sound? Did it sound like static or crackling, popping noises, anything like that?
It didn't make a sound, which was very unnerving because there were three of them, but one was, it seemed like it was the alpha sort of the group. And the best way I can describe it, and I always will say to people, is it was a human shape, but it didn't feel human. It almost felt animal. And it was sort of stalking us, like it was down on its haunches and it was moving sort of back and forth and very much like herding us, like pushing us out of the area. And again, it made no sound. It was just there. It was one of the strangest experiences I've ever had.
Well, Greg, what about you? What was your first foray into the paranormal?
Well, I mean, I've had a few strange experiences when I was younger. I had a really bad problem where I would sneak out of the house at night. And it was something that drove my parents absolutely crazy. My dad actually had to count the shoes in our mudroom before he went to bed because I was always gone. And so the strangest experience I had was I'd snuck out with my friends one night, and we went to this place that we always referred to as the Church of the Damned. And that wasn't its real name. We were just kids, and we thought it sounded really cool. And it had legends attached to it, and people would see lights on in this place when there wasn't any electricity, or they'd see people moving around or people in the windows. And it's this little church in Burlington, Pennsylvania, just outside of Troy, which is the town I grew up in, really small, you know, one stoplight kind of town. And this historical church sits up on a hill on a cemetery. And one night we ran out of places to go. It was exceptionally cold out. We didn't know, you know, where we were going to go. The cars couldn't get up the mountains to the usual cemeteries we'd go to. And so we went to this church, and we didn't really know much about it other than the legends that had kind of, you know, gone from ear to ear in school. Well, we were in this church, and we start asking questions. We're a bit slap-happy by this point, and so we start, you know, joking around and asking questions and making jokes about the movie Ghost Dad with Bill Cosby and things like that, when all of a sudden, we all notice this very solid, thick mist start to come down these stairs, this stairway.
actually went to the pulpit, this round pulpit. And we all stopped because we'd experienced some strange things before. We'd seen, you know, shadows or heard things, but it was never anything that was quite as visceral as seeing this thing start to manifest and come down these stairs. And we watched this thing start to come down these stairs, and we didn't know what to do. So we're saying, you know, we're here in peace. We're here to talk to you, just rambling, anything that we could possibly say to try and make contact with this thing. And we had our recorders running, and we're fumbling with things. And all of a sudden, this one guy we were with, who was recording the entire thing for a documentary, grabs his throat and falls to the ground. And we didn't know what to do, so we dragged him out of the place. And he says, something grabbed me and strangled me and pushed me to the ground. And you could see the handprints on his neck where something had actually grabbed him. Even at that point, I wasn't convinced. But for six months.
Wait a minute. You are a hard man to impress. When you watch one of your buddies get the Darth Vader death gripper on his throat and hit the ground, and you're like, I just don't know about that.
Like I said, I mean, here's what my thought process was. It was exceptionally cold.
Uh-huh.
And so I thought, okay, this might have been some weird fog that we saw that just formed and you know, was just kind of descending. It looked like it was descending. And the guy that we were with, you know, he had an asthma attack or something. Maybe he grabbed his own throat. That's where my head was. But that was still one of the scariest things I'd ever experienced. And so for 6 months, my friends and I actually stopped ghost hunting. We didn't do any ghost hunting after that for 6 months. Of course, and this is what convinced me. One night, 6 months later, we were at our favorite all-night diner, and we start talking about our old ghost hunting adventures. And eventually, we psyched each other up and said, all right, we're going to do this. We're going to go back. You know, what we saw, we were convinced that we had made it up somehow, or there was a logical explanation to it. So we went back to this place, and very gingerly opened the chain and went back inside and stood there. And before long, again, we finally build up the courage to start speaking to whatever we thought might be in there. Well, eventually someone decided to mention the name Jesus Christ, and all of a sudden we watched a book levitate up off of the pulpit and fly through the air. It went straight past my head. I felt it whiz past my ear, slammed against the wall. Boom, we were gone, out. That was it. And that was the thing that finally convinced me, okay, there's something going on here. And that was by far the craziest ghost experience I've ever had. That's made me believe.
Well, it sounds like it, right? So now it's not human error that could be causing this, where somebody's mind could be affecting them, as you were saying with your friend the first time around. But in this chance, you're actually seeing the book levitate and move itself across the room.
I was there with three people. I mean, we all saw the same exact thing. And my response, actually, everyone thought that I had something to do with it, because my response as we were running in terror out of this place was I was laughing, because I didn't know how to handle it. I'd never experienced anything like it before. So, you know, I'm running as fast as I can, but I'm also laughing because it was so bizarre. And I mean, I've played it back in my head for years. I mean, this probably happened 10 years ago, and I've played it through my head, I mean, all the time, but I just cannot come up with a logical answer as to how this happened.
Let me ask you kind of a tough question then, Greg. You know, for somebody who's had his own experiences, I know for a while you were really kind of more into the skeptical mindset, and and you went after a lot of TV shows and a lot of the people on there as though those experiences couldn't possibly have happened, and look how fake they must be. But yet you've had your own experiences. How do you vacillate between what I experience is real, what anybody else claims is garbage?
Well, you know, want to know what the interesting thing was? I had that experience before I fell on the skeptic side of the fence. Isn't that crazy? And I think that says a lot about a lot of modern-day popular skeptics, is I think a lot of these people went into the paranormal community, because I think that you'd find that a lot of people who are pretty hardcore militant skeptics were once some of the craziest hardcore believers you'd ever meet. And so I think it says something about the skeptic movement, at least the capital S skeptic movement. The reason that I was such a skeptic, to dig in on that a little bit, was because I think, I was, for lack of a better word, jealous of other people's experiences. And I think once you get to this point where you realize that no amount of data that you can gather is really going to convince a hardcore skeptic. There's nothing that you're going to gather that's going to convince the hardcore skeptic. No one's ever going to win the $1 million challenge. It's just not going to happen. It's designed to not happen. And I think the biggest reasoning for that is the paranormal is a very subjective thing. So, I mean, it's great that we have hundreds, if not thousands, of teams, amateur and professional, out there trying to gather hardcore data to prove this thing. But I think that the problem is it's a very subjective thing. When you think and you hear people, you hear them constantly, Dave. You hear people's experiences.
Right.
But they are subjective. So, you know, I in the last at least 5 years, my opinions have changed a lot because I finally came to this conclusion where I said, you know what, I'm going to look at this differently, and I'm going to try and look at the why of the paranormal instead of the how of the paranormal. And that's really changed how I've approached it. And now I approach it in a more subjective way. I want to experience these things, and it might not convince any hardcore skeptics, but that's not as important to me as seeing why we believe what we do.
Now, let me ask you, you used to be a part of a group called Ghost Hunters, Inc., is that right?
I did, yes.
Dana, I want you to know you and I might share something more in common than you thought before. You may not have been the only one that was stalked by Greg at one point.
Oh no, where's this going? What did I
do? When I began Darkness Radio back in 2006, 2007, I started getting DVDs from some group. Called Ghost. Oh, I still have them. I still have a stack of them. It was like every 2 months I'd get these CD-ROMs or DVDs of this group called Ghost Hunters, Inc., and we really want to be on your show and watch our stuff. And I would pop in these DVDs, and there are these three muscleheads walking around cursing like sailors. And I'm like, I can't use these guys on my show. But I always thought it was funny to have that. How do you rectify, Dana, pairing up with a guy who's such a skeptic when you know what you've experienced and you've got a healthy belief and open mind about the paranormal? Did you ever have to how many times do you shoot him the drop dead look because he's constantly questioning everything that's going on?
Quite often, actually. I do it a lot. I think that we keep each other pretty balanced, and I think that we sort of bring each other right to the middle, which I think is a good place to be, where he'll sort of talk me down from a lot of things and I'll sort of talk him out of his stubbornness and not believing in a lot of things. So there's a really healthy middle ground that we've been able to sort of like get to, but I've definitely on pretty much a daily basis will shoot him that glance. He's pretty familiar with it, I think.
Well, you guys are out road tripping quite a bit now, going from paranormal event to paranormal event. You guys have your own traveling museum. We don't have much time to get into it in this segment, but how can people find you and see the things that you've collected?
People can find out more about the Traveling Museum of the Paranormal and the Occult by going to weirdhq.com. And there's a list of schedules and places they can come check it out and what we've got in the museum. And we'll hopefully be updating it more and more and more as the years go on and people can see more weird and interesting stuff.
I will tell you, this weekend I had two listeners, a pair of listeners, husband and wife team, that donated their haunted dolls to me.
Oh no.
So I'm going to check these out. They are creepy looking, and I'll shoot you pictures. Maybe I'll loan them. I'll send them out on loan with you guys. You can take them around in your haunted tour and see what happens. But, the stories these two were telling me, I'm not even sure I want them in my house at this point. I've got them wrapped in magical bubble wrap. And then I figured if sheets are good enough to keep a ghost out, I put them inside of a pillowcase because that should be able to keep them from getting out of it. Right. I mean, it only makes sense. right? When you're frightened, you pull your sheets up over your head to protect you. This has got to be the way to keep them from attacking me and my children. Brilliant. But I do have two new creepy haunted dolls. I'll make sure to, I've got a whole collection, actually. I've got a closet full of dolls. If somebody ever walked in and I died unexpectedly, they're going to be like, what was this freak into? So I'll send you guys some of my favorite ones and get that going. We've got our guests with us for the first 2 hours of the show here, and we have links up to them and their work. You can check it out. Greg and Dana will stay with us. We'll find more about their strange occult and haunted tour, and we'll find out about some of the other programs they're involved with. Stay tuned. This is the best in overnight talk radio. I'm Dave Schrader, and you're listening to Coast AM. The paranormal couple, Greg Newkirk and Dana Matthews, are with us this evening. And if you're wondering, well, how the heck can I meet somebody that I can share all of my strange and paranormal occultist encounters with? Well, the answer may be a little bit easier than what these two had to go through. You don't have to drive to Canada and start stalking the woman of your dreams. Instead, just join ParanormalDate.com and stalk them online like the rest of us do. Paranormal Date, they're approaching 24,000 members. 24,000 members, people that are interested in the supernatural and the paranormal. And it's free to go in and check it out and sign up. And then if you decide you'd like to become a full-fledged member, it's very easy to do, very inexpensive. And who knows, you may find the love of your life. And you can start traveling the world and investigating haunted locations and UFO encounters, Bigfoot sites. Just check it out, ParanormalDate.com. That's what's going on right now. Plus, you can find BeyondBelief.com, George Norrie's television program. This week is Cosmic Disclosure with Corey Good on the Secret Space Program. All that information is over at CoastToCoastAM.com. That's CoastToCoastAM.com. While you're there, become an insider. You'll never miss another minute of the best in overnight talk radio. You can sign up, and literally a one-year subscription comes down to 15 cents a day. That gives you 5 years of past archives, live chats with the hosts and many of the guests that you hear on Coast to Coast AM, and you get all the great news feeds and everything else. So go check it out. It's all-inclusive, all on the site, CoastToCoastAM.com, for all the information you hear on the show, for links to BeyondBelief.com, George Norrie's TV series, and where you can find a way to find the love or friend of your life at ParanormalDate.com. Greg and Dana are still here with us. We'll continue to talk about their adventures, including I want to know about the time they came face-to-face with the Sasquatch. We've got Paranormal Encounters, their museum tour, and more. That's next here on Coast to Coast AM. We're back here on Coast to Coast AM. I'm Dave Schrader. Joining me this evening, Greg Newkirk and Dana Matthews, talking about their adventures and trips around the world to investigate claims of the strange and supernatural. In the opening, we talked about the fact that you came face-to-face with a Bigfoot. Which one of you did that, or was it both of you?
It was both of us.
It was both of us.
Now, is this just a Lynx, Jack's Lynx cardboard cutout Bigfoot, or did you legitimately see something you believe to be a Sasquatch?
It was the event that I think made us both believe in Sasquatch. We had met these guys who claimed that they knew a foolproof way to let us meet a Sasquatch. And while we didn't actually see it come towards us, it yelled at us, and it was unlike anything I'd ever heard before. I don't know if you or your listeners have ever heard of these guys by the name of Dallas and Wayne. They go by, and they're out of Portsmouth, Ohio, and they're pretty much outcasts in the Bigfoot community. People don't take them seriously at all, and I mean, it's easy to see why when you watch how these guys work. They invited us to come out and hang out with them, and they took this liking to Dana, and they taught her the Bigfoot language. I don't know. Do you remember how it goes, Dana?
I believe to greet a Bigfoot, you have to say Tia Hia Como Momo. And that is apparently a proper Bigfoot greeting.
So you can see why people don't really take them seriously.
Right. And if we have a Bigfoot listening to the show tonight that would like to correct Dana, please feel free to give us a call. So it's Tia Hia what?
My accent might be wrong.
Yeah.
It's Tia Hia Como Momo, which is, I believe I might be messing it up, but I'm pretty sure that's how you properly introduce yourself to a Bigfoot.
All right. Well, that's once you meet a Bigfoot. How do you attract them to actually come up and visit with you?
But what ended up happening was we hung out with them for the entire day. They found some Bigfoot tracks. They taught Dana the language. They taught us how to do a Bigfoot scream, and they shared stories with us about how, you know, one of them actually was choking while they were out in the woods one day, and swears Bigfoot came up and gave him the Heimlich maneuver. And he was very sincere about it. He was actually kind of tearing up while he was talking about how Bigfoot saved his life. And, you know, we didn't really believe him at the time, for obvious reasons, but we got set up for the campfire at night, and we sat there, and eventually, you know, and this is in the middle of nowhere. They took us way out to the hills of West Virginia. There was nothing around. The dirt road that took us out to this field, which they called the Boneyard, was a place that farmers would drive way out in the middle of nowhere to dump their dead cattle. And they believe that it actually attracted a local Sasquatch population. Well, the lights go down, the campfire goes up, and Wayne turns to Dana and says, "Why don't you try that howl, that howl I taught you? Do the holler." And so Dana, you know, gives it her best shot. And we're all kind of laughing. And then Wayne starts doing it again. And the laughter ceases when something hollers back. And it was unlike anything we'd ever heard before. It was really deep and huge. And, you know, my first instinct was to go sit in the car because I was scared of what was coming. But instantly, all of this stuff that they'd been talking about all day started to make more sense because whatever it was clearly working. And the yells started getting closer to us, and rocks started being tossed at our campfire. Pretty soon, another one answers the other one that had been yelling on both sides of us. And at this point, they were so close that we could swear we started seeing these big silhouettes moving around in the horizon. And this went on for at least an hour while we sat there glued to our chairs. And of course, Dallas and Wayne start laughing because we were so scared. And they're like, "This happens all the time. This is nobody, we can't get anybody to believe us, but this happens constantly." And people could see this footage. This footage is online. They can check it out. We actually sent the recordings of the noise that we captured to a bunch of Bigfoot hunters and a bunch of people who actually are animal experts. And they say, "I can't tell you what this noise is, but I can tell you that whatever it is has a massive lung capacity and is just huge."
When you're out there doing a Bigfoot investigation in a place that's known to have Bigfoot, and places where people go to try to investigate, does it ever cross your mind in the skeptical nature that maybe it's one set of Bigfoot hunters on the other side of the woods whooping and knocking trees, and the other group getting excited on the other side of the woods thinking it's a Bigfoot, and they start whooping and knocking trees, and really there's no Bigfoot, it's just two groups of idiots on the other side of the forest banging and knocking and whooping at one another?
You know, that was the first thing I thought. It's in the middle of nowhere, and these guys had to have been hiding, like, in deep forests, just sitting out there. If there were actually people sitting out there, they would have had to have been out there. There were no fires. There were no lights. There was nothing. And so, you know, the more rational side of me is going, like, this has to be a setup. This is too perfect. But I don't know. I can't think of, you know, that's dedication. If they had someone out there, we were out there with them since 10 a.m. So if they had somebody out there, that's dedication.
Dana, do you guys get jumpy on a normal basis when you're out investigating and you literally start to come face to face with what you're looking for?
Absolutely. I mean, that situation in particular was crazy, especially when they started hollering back and forth to each other. Because we weren't expecting it, first of all. So when we first started hearing them, we were this mixture between like in awe and like completely terrified. And it was one of the craziest like experiences I've ever had. So that is usually what we both are experiencing at the same time. It's like a mixture between being terrified and completely excited at the same time.
And you said this is online somewhere, this video?
Yeah, let me, I'll dig the link up and I'll shoot it over to you.
Yeah, please do. And then I'll send that in to Tim over at Coast to Coast AM and see if they can post it on the Twitter feed and on the news page so that you can see this. When you hear something like this, that's what I've always laughed about. You know, these big bad hunters go out into the woods looking for these things. I guess just like we do going in looking for ghosts in haunted locations. What happens if you catch one? What happens if while you're out there, you come face to face with a 10-foot tall, hairy, bipedal creature that may not be happy? It's already throwing rocks at you. When you're out there, you know, and you're kind of getting a kick out of these guys in their weird ways and teaching you how to talk Bigfoot and this, and then it goes from just two quirky guys to suddenly you start hearing these bellowing cries.
Yeah, well, I mean
walk me through that. How does that feel? I mean, do you really start to question your place in the universe?
Right, of course. You know, the first thing I thought, and this is again one of these valuable lessons, was, you know, not to write somebody off because you think that they're crazy. You know, these people might be doing something that actually works. And, you know, the first thing that I thought was, okay, all right, well, what are we going to do? We have to point the cameras. We have to point all the recorders. We have to get as much evidence of this as we possibly can because no one's going to believe us. And we gathered as much as we could, but, you know, there's only so much you can get.
So that was the first thing you thought. Was the second thing you thought, I better be able to run faster than Dana?
Well, we had Jason Gowan with us.
So. All right. Problem solved.
Bigfoot bait.
Yes.
I saw the car. That's what I was doing. I was standing right between where the car door closes in case I had to get in the car and drive away. I was that scared.
Understandable. Well, yeah, and that's another one of those things. Again, I'm not an outdoors guy. I'm really intrigued with the idea of Bigfoot, and personally, I'm jealous. I'd love to go to this location and have that happen, theoretically.
Let's go, Dave.
I think once I get there, though, somebody's going to have to carry me to the car because I'm going to black out when I start hearing these whoops and hoots and hollers coming at me from the woods and they start chucking rocks. I'm just not that guy. We are, you know, I'm for our listeners, and I know people are still hitting me up on email. Speaking of which, there's a lady that we had on the show, 100 Bigfoot Nights, where she's being terrorized by something in the woods. People wanted to know if I've had a chance to go out to Christine Del Parker's to investigate. We have not. It's been really hellish to try to get the people I want involved to coordinate and be able to pull it all together. We are still working on that, folks. I promise as soon as we get an investigation underway, and maybe I'll take Greg and Dana with me, and they seem adept now to talk Bigfoot. Maybe they'll get some action that way. But when we do this and we get it, I promise I will alert everybody on Coast to Coast AM to what we actually find. If it's real or just imagined by this family, we'll report back to you on that on the show. Now, talk to me about the traveling tour in the museum that you guys have going out there. How many different displays do you have that are part of this?
We've got, I think, just under 20 at this point, and we try to rotate them so that every event we go to, we have some stuff that's a little bit different. And it's stuff that we're taking submissions for it all the time. Every once in a while, we'll put out an APB for people's weird stuff. If they have something that they think is strange and out of the ordinary, and they want us to take it on display, we'll make them a little name tag that has, you know, their name on it and their information if they want that public. Some people don't. But we have anything from, we have a plank from the actual Amityville Horror House. It's never done anything strange for us, but a lot of psychic sensitives who approach it get very, very wigged out. It did make some people's EVP meter or EMF meters go crazy at an event recently. We have a painting, a haunted painting that's known for throwing itself off of walls. We got it from a guy in Loveland, Ohio, who had a curiosity shop. And we came in one day, and he's like, you know, you guys have gotten weird stuff from me before. I'm going to give this thing to you because I can't keep it on my wall. I'll come in the store every morning. Either it or the paintings around it will be on the floor. And it's gotten so bad, I'll go in the back of the room, and I'll hear it rattle. I'll come back. It's off of the wall. So, you know, he gave this thing to us. It never gave us any trouble. It actually didn't give us any trouble until we introduced the dark mirror into the traveling museum, which has been the thing that's been getting the most attention recently. And it is it's a scrying mirror. I know you've had some experiences with scrying mirrors.
Yes.
It's a scrying mirror
that was given to us by a woman whose mother became obsessed with it. And she had gotten this thing from a psychic fair in Ohio and was learning to scry. And for your listeners who aren't familiar with what scrying is, it's the same concept as a crystal ball. So some people would use it to see the future. Some people use it for black magic. Some people use it to tell fortunes and things like that. And recently, it's started to get very popular to use in paranormal investigation. Well, every time she'd try to use this, her mother would only see terrible things in it. And eventually she became obsessed with it. She became withdrawn from her family, and her daughter took it away. We knew this woman, and she knew us, and so she said, take it, investigate with it, play with it, see what you can find out. My mother can't have it anymore. I don't care. You can share the story, but just don't share her identity. So we've been taking this thing to different events. We've had it at about a half a dozen events now, and every single event, like clockwork, people are reporting the same exact things. Some people who gaze into the thing are starting to see their own corpses staring back at them. They've reported seeing the actual maggots on their face, on their dead face. A lot of people are reporting that they're feeling the feeling of electroshocks in their hands when they hold it. Some people, one woman in particular, tasted the taste of blood filling up in her mouth. One guy who was really skeptical about it, he walks up and sees that there's a commotion around the mirror, and he starts to laugh and is like, oh, give me that thing. So he takes it and he starts to look in it. Not 20 seconds go by and he about drops it, sets it down on the table. And I asked him what he saw, and he said that he saw himself peek around from behind himself and then walk away. So lots of strange things with the mirror. And my thought on the mirror is, we keep it covered, and we had it in our living room. All the stuff in the traveling museum is stuff that we just keep in the living room.
Sure. And it's perfect place
really,
for it.
I mean, we've never really had a problem with much of it.
Uh-huh.
Until the mirror shows up. Eventually, the mirror started uncovering itself at night. We'd keep it covered because, you know, I'm a little freaked out by it. I'm a little scared of it. Most of the scare comes from the fact that I'm afraid that I won't see anything when I look into it, and then I won't be able to effectively sell the story, right? Well, eventually it started uncovering itself at night, and we thought, oh, it must be the cats. Cats won't go anywhere near it. They hate it, absolutely hate it. And eventually, some of the things in our traveling museum that are supposed to be haunted starting acting haunted for the first time. So the painting finally threw itself off the wall. We woke up. And there it was. And we thought we'd heard a crash the night before, but didn't think much of it. Nope, the painting came right off the wall. And people who come to to any of the events and see it, they can see actually where there's a big gash in it now because it came off the wall. We have a planchette that's supposed to be haunted and allegedly set itself on fire in Bachelor's Grove Cemetery back in the 90s. Heard that sliding around in its glass case at night. Never did it before. So now we keep it locked away in a chest until it's time for the events, and things have been calm so far.
Dana, has there ever been something that you guys are going to add, and then once you hear the story, you just say, yeah, I don't want that in our living room?
I was always that way with the mirror. I really don't like it. I'm not a fan of it, and I think what terrifies me the most about it is how every person that looks into it experiences a similar thing, even though it could be completely random events. So we could bring it one place, someone will have an experience with it, and a couple of weeks later a completely different person will experience the same thing. And so for me, the mirror was, I really hated it, and I didn't want it on display, or and I would have been happy if it would have been in a trunk somewhere in a closet rather than out in public, because it just gives me bad vibes. It gives everybody bad vibes. And so once we put it in a trunk and now it's, you know, it's not on display, it's definitely hidden away, I'm happier about that. But the experiences that people have with it just continue to boggle my mind. It's so interesting that, and terrifying at the same time.
We do. We incorporate at a lot of our events a room that we'll put together. We call it the Psychomantium room, where we'll have the mirror set up with a low light, like a flickering candle or something. And I understand how the mind works and consciousness and how your brain can trick itself. What I thought was interesting was a good friend of ours, Jolie, had snuck her camera in, because you're not supposed to have any other lights, nothing else to distract. And as she was looking into the mirror, from time to time, the entire mirror would go black. And that was what some people would report, or they would see distortions. Well, she actually caught some of it on her video camera, actually occurring. So it wasn't just a trick of the mind's eye. When she would see this, the mirror would black out. Things would happen. We were at the Palmer House Hotel in Sauk Center, Minnesota, really great haunted location up here, right in our neck of the woods. And we were doing an event, and this girl wanted to do the Psychomantium so bad, but she didn't want to go alone. So I had to go in the same room with her and sit behind her so she couldn't see me as she was looking in the mirror. As we're doing that, one of the weirdest things I've ever seen, all of a sudden I see what looks like the top of a kid's head by the bottom of the mirror.
Ooh.
And this little kid's face looks up in the mirror back at us. Oh, and at the same time I see it, she goes, "Holy beep, do you see the kid?" And we turned on the lights. Part of me are still puckered from that night. That's all I can say. You have an experience with it, and it will change your perspective. We've got to take a break. We'll come back after the top of the hour. Dana and Greg are going to join us for the remainder of this next hour. We've got a lot more to cover, a lot more cool stories, haunted locations, weird places that they've been to. And we'll talk about the seance, another project that they're involved in. You're listening to the best in overnight talk radio. I'm Dave Schrader, and this is Coast to Coast AM.